can narrow the scope of the landmark. You can have a broad, you can, you know, anything from 1950s on, or you can really narrow it down to style and building and you know, the who owned it in the past, really narrow that. And by doing that, you're going to narrow the amount that you defer. You know, I'd hope that you could set a dollar amount that you were comfortable with deferring, and once you reach that, you didn't defer anymore until someone came out of the program. But it's really got to be based on the integrity of what you're designating as a landmark. Staff can go out and come up with a large inventory, so we can kind of get an idea. But it really takes, it's very time consuming. It takes a lot of expertise. It takes a lot of forethought to narrow that inventory down. So we can go out and give you a kind of a broad idea of what we think would be considered, but then the commission really has to narrow that inventory down, and they need to map it, and they narrow it down based on what makes a landmark. It can't be voluntary. The commission can put that into the ordinance that it's a voluntary program. If you don't have the consent of the property owner, then you don't have to consider them. Now, you don't have to do that. You can designate them a landmark against their wishes, but I don't think this board or the history going back has pretty much been not to do that, not to impose this upon the property owners. There's also, I think, some concern about, again, if I could impress upon folks is that this is not a national register. This is not a historic district. This is not a restrictive covenant. This is simply a landmark designation that gives you the ability to preserve these landmarks, and it gives the property owner a 50% reduction in their taxes, defers a 50%. Houses can come out. If a property gets designated a landmark, and then there's a separate ordinance designating that house as a landmark. If they don't continue to comply with what's set forth in that ordinance, then they can be removed. They can be removed for neglect. They can be removed because they didn't get a certificate of appropriateness. They didn't get the approval to make improvements or to make expansions. They can come off, and then if that happens, they then are liable for that year's taxes plus the three previous years. So it's the present year plus 3 years going back. They can demolish the house. Now there are some cases in which the state property office, state historic office, gets to weigh in on these certificates of appropriateness. They get to give their input, and the commission must consider that input, but they don't have to act on that input. The exception is with demolition. And one thing I think that would be important with, is that if someone wants to demolish their property and they are on the National Register, that is when it can be problematic for them. It's very rare that anyone ever gets denied the ability for a demolition permit. But it can happen. Demolition may be denied if the property is deemed to be of statewide significance by the historic preservation officer. This is rare. And Scott Power is our officer, our state officer, I asked which one. Roberta helped with this and asked, okay, give us an example. And the only one that came to his mind that could be an exception would be the First Colony Inn. That would be a problematic for demolition. The other thing that I think is more important for you all to consider, I think it's worthy of considering. I think if you had a very set criteria that the commission stuck with in their recommendations, you can also, in that demolition request, you can put a year holding period on that before it's acted, so that you could determine, okay, are there other ways to preserve this property? Is it worthy of being preserved to the point that you may go out and try and solicit funds to preserve it? But again, the integrity of the commission is, if you enact that, you're not just designating so many. And then plus, some folks are going to want it simply for the 50% deferral, and it's going to be difficult to, you know, to make that judgment. But I think if the commission does their work, that it can become less subjective, because either you do meet it or you don't. So I think the next step, if the board's interested in doing this, I think the time to you've got to look at the inventory. You got to look at how much money are we talking about deferring, and can we afford to do something like this? You have to determine where your value is. You know, how much are you willing to make up to preserve the history and the landmarks of Nag's Head? And then it takes some more public education to continue to dispel the government takeover of property rights. That's not the case. It's voluntary. And then the inventory. The commission has got a lot of work to do before doing this. There's a lot of work. The only other thing I'd add to this is there is a process for appeal of denial of a certificate of appropriateness or denial of a demolition, and that goes to the Board of Adjustments. So that there is a process in place according to the statutes. There's a lot of background on this. The general statutes are pretty clear. We have a tremendous resource in the State Historical Property Office. Our officers, Scott Power, would be a wonderful resource for a committee or a workshop or for further exploration. But I think it's something that's really worthy of considering. If you look at Kill Devil Hills, they've and we verified this, they've deferred $22,000 worth of landmarks. And that's an insignificant amount of deferral in order to preserve those landmarks. In my opinion, I think they probably have a more broad scope or a more opportunity for folks to be designated a landmark. I would recommend that our criteria be pretty narrow. And it's kind of a nutshell review of this. I do think it's worth exploring and maybe bringing Scott and looking at the inventory.
Questions for Cliff?
So the first step would be the inventory?
Yeah, and again, it's very intensive, and like I said, we can throw a lot of properties in there, but the commission is going to be the one that's responsible for actually going out and doing, presenting you the inventory. It becomes part of their responsibility that this is the inventory of potential homes. And then I guess there's a process to be petitioned to enter into that inventory, but then, you know, you ask people, you tell them you can be considered a landmark. Do you want to? As Meredith mentioned, some commissions will go out and actually hire consultants, give them a list of the criteria, and then they'll go out and do the research and the deed work and the title work and everything to compile, you know, to get them on the list or not. But then others use the commission members with the assistance of staff.
Other comments, maybe? Thank you for bringing this up.
Well, again, you know, the question keeps being asked of me, what does the town put on the value of the history that's in the town? And I just feel like this is so less restrictive than either the National Register or the State Register, that it's not a government takeover. It is voluntary, and it almost comes down to being chosen to be considered. And if you are considered, you don't have to agree to it. I just hope that the board would go further with this and let the town manager amass a list of those properties that may fall into this category. Think about the people that you could put on this committee, and through the efforts of our Senator Bassnight back in 2003, he did get that passed where we can have absentee owners beyond that, and I think that each one of us, if we were pushed to shove, could name people that would be fabulous for this committee. So I'm all for going forward with this and just see where it goes.
Other comments? My concern is more the financial impact. And is there a way to divide the 50% tax discount from the, that's part of the statute that goes along with everything?
It's all the 50, but that's the other thing I looked at. Can we, is it up to a maximum of, but if they get designated a landmark, they get the 50% off. It's the land and the property. It's not real property. I mean, it's the MSD, it's their ad valorem tax.
I think we've got a lot more properties that would meet criteria than Killable Hills would have, and a lot of our properties are going to be on the oceanfront, and they're paying the MSD tax. You kind of set up a situation where, okay, you're not getting that tax income from those folks. You end up getting it from your west side residents, really.
Well, the one thing, Cliff and I have talked about this too a little bit, Mayor, excuse me, you can also set a dollar amount on the historic value that you are willing or able to defer. And once you reach that amount, it can be on hold. The other thing is, I know that in the past when we have approached the historic district for would you like to be protected, they have adamantly said, no, I don't believe you're going to have the historic district, the Oceanside, clamoring for this prestigious designation. The buildings, the ones that I'm thinking of that are interested are, a couple are actually west side. Tax value isn't really great. There's also some on just on the west side of the beach road. It's not going to have that value. It's not going to have that great loss of tax revenue. So that is something that could easily be done. You budget what you can comfortably subtract from your income and let that be your guide until you get such a massive request, which I don't think will happen on the oceanfront. That's just a thought.
Now, 50% is a pretty good carrot.
Well, there's still those who feel on the oceanfront that this is another takeover by the town. So, I don't know. I'll be surprised to see. Mayor, maybe your house, maybe, could be, possibly. But I would be very surprised to see many oceanfronts want to get involved. Which would be sad, but I think it's true. So, what is your recommendation for a process?
I think it'd be, if the board wants to move forward, I think it not to establish a commission yet, but get a group of citizens together, those that may have some landmarks, that have an interest in this, and having a committee, a workshop of interested folks, and maybe have Scott Power come down from the state historic office, and vet the idea with those that are affected by it.
And that's after the inventory or prior to?
Prior to. And then so we could...
You'd have to establish the commission, because the commission is the group that actually sets the,
right.
The inventory.
But we can get an idea of what we're talking about.
Yes.
And you can get an idea of how much tax value you're talking about as well.
My whole
desire for bringing this forward is not so much on giving the tax break, we'd all like that. It is trying to preserve the history of Nag's Head. And that's truly what I desire. I probably will live to see long enough to see some of our history removed. And you can't replace it.
Well, I think we all share that concern. And there are more and more pressures as houses go down through families. You've got first it's brothers and sisters, then it's cousins, and everybody's got a little bit less interest involved in it. Ms. Ratzenberger, would you like to come up to the podium? We'll get you on the record.
I'm John Ratzenberger. I live on Sea-Watch Court. I'm old and not historic. So I think your concerns about how much is going to come off the books and everything else are more reflected by what, you know, Commissioner Sadler was talking about finding the room truly historic. Historic is a badly abused word these days. I saw a TV news thing the other day where some twin-engine Navy airplane landed on Wallops Island instead of Fentress, and everybody's raving about this historic landing. Well, twin-engine airplanes land on two-bit airports everywhere, every day. It's not historic. There's a dozen or so of the old cottages up here. Who built it? Who lived in it? What events took place in it? And pretty soon you find out that those dozen cottages are old. They're their character in Nag's Head, but they're not historic. George Washington did not sleep in any of them, and maybe nobody did. And pretty soon you winnow them down, and maybe only one of the 12 is historic. So I think if the commission does its job and evaluates all of the things, and I say all this because I'm the curator in a museum, so I have an idea when I'm evaluating my own displays, what's truly historic versus what's just put out there. You're going to find that a lot of our homes and stuff are not historic by the character, like I said, who owned it, what events took place, what did it set, what did it do, and what did the impact on the community itself. Pretty soon a dozen items or two dozen items by themselves are not historic, one or two of them may be. And so I think your concerns about the number of things that go on the rolls will be, if the commission is doing what it should do and what it sounds like KDH did, they're going to winnow that list down to truly historic things. And so that's just my input on it, is instead of focusing on the amount of taxes we might lose, let's focus on doing the job the correct way and getting a truly historic look at it.
Thank you, sir. I think I do hear consensus to move forward with that next step and ask the fellow from the State Historic Commission to come down and kind of begin a preliminary inventory and look, see what that might look like. Does that suit everybody? Okay. So is that
yes,
clear,
sir.
Good clear direction?
And if you have any names to suggest that to sit in on that, then we'll try and get a good workable, manageable group together.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, we've kept... Teresa Osborne? I don't see Teresa Osborne in here.
No.